Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all these skills to address the subjects that we grapple with in this conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth. Sorry. I have to pod you up. Remember that every single time. How are you doing today, Elizabeth?
I am good. I am having a lot of thoughts, which I think is what happens every Tuesday. A lot more thoughts than time to talk about them. But let's start with this thought. Today is my daughter's 32nd birthday.
Congratulations.
See, okay, that was the right response. It's her 32nd birthday, Kirsten Isabel. And I, again, want to celebrate my daughter's 32 years on the planet. But don't you think when we talk about birthday, it should be the process of the person who birthed the human being that gets some sort of prize?
I mean, that's not usually how we celebrate it.
But. Well, I get that. But I mean, I'm always up for changing traditions a little bit because I had a 36-hour labor with this daughter. And it was kind of long and luxurious. It wasn't as intense as my second time, but I don't know, whenever we get to this day, I relive that 36-hour experience. Like every year around June 5th, I experience the birth process of bringing this person into the world. And so, you know, I don't need like cards or flowers or letters, and always appreciate them, but don't need them. But I think there should be some honoring of that birthday, because for anyone who's given birth, I think you know what I'm saying, it's monumental in your experience as a human being on the planet and needs to be honored in some way, because I think we kind of toss off the whole process of childbirth as like something we do between making breakfast and going to work, you know, just, oh, and I had a child and now I'm back to work. But it's the process of birth is life-changing. You know, it's just you, and this was my experience, but after giving birth, there was nothing I couldn't do. You know, having made it through that process, I felt mighty in ways that I never imagined feeling mighty. And not only having a child now in your life, which changes you forever, and you're never going back to being who you were prior to this birthing. So not only are you birthing this child, you're birthing yourself in a new way. You're birthing your relationship. You know, my relationship with my husband changed fundamentally in those 36 hours and has forever been transformed. And so I think a lot about how important it is that we stop in our life and take time to really sit with how sacred some things are and sit with the magnitude of events that are life-changing, because it's really, you know, no one's going to send down balloons or shoot off a gun or, right, or say, yay, yay, go you. We don't have that built-in, you know, there isn't a built-in game show happening in our life where we win a prize every time we answer something correctly. So it really is on us to create those moments that feel powerful, that feel sacred, that feel magic. And if we don't take the time to have those ritual moments, those times where we just feel in awe of life, then our lives will tend to feel inherently meaningless and empty. And that is how we set ourselves up for feeling like we need to numb ourselves with food and drink and activity so we feel something in that cavernous emptiness that we can feel. Mm-hmm. You know, because inherently life is meaningless. You know, there is not a lot to it. So we have to create those moments of meaning. We have to create that sense of fullness in our life to make us feel like we're weighted here.
Yeah.
And so that's where I am in this moment, thinking about my daughter. So happy birthday to Kirsten. And she's the mother to my wonderful granddaughter. And just her existence on the planet is everything to me.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Well, where are we off to today?
So we're off to kind of that same trajectory that I want to kind of focus on this season of celebrations, because we're in that season of celebrations. I don't know about you, but I have a stack of graduation announcements and wedding announcements and new baby announcements. Lots.
I lucked out this year.
Nothing?
I lucked out. My plate is very, but I have had, believe me, late springs and summers before that were just chock full.
Chock full. This is the time. And it's interesting because, you know, through spring and early summer, new life begins. It's an apropos time to be celebrating transitions and changes. And so I attended a graduation on Saturday of a young man I consider a nephew, a family friend I've watched grow up his entire life, and to see him as a full-grown high school graduate, young man setting out into the world. I was thinking about those words that are said as we send people off, and I labor on the cards that I send to people or the things that I want to say to them, you know, and probably because my whole life is communication. So I think a lot about the words that come out of my mouth or the words that I write down because I know that they have power. And I had been a mentor in some ways to this young man. And so I didn't want to just throw out any sort of sentiment. I really wanted to talk about things that mattered in my card to him. And so as I was sitting in the graduation, though, listening to the speeches that were given, the commencement address, they had one of the teachers, I'm guessing it was a favorite teacher, got up and spoke to the class to give his words of wisdom. And I was a little heartsick because of the speech he decided to give. This teacher talked a lot about the things that I think our kids of this generation have heard way too much of, which is you are leaving school, this bubble, and moving out into a world that is coming undone. Like, he basically talked about climate change and the political unrest and how, you know, our government couldn't be trusted. And here they were stepping off the precipice with the tools they needed to navigate this basically world on fire. And it was so disheartening because I thought that is the last thing I would want my high school senior to hear, because I know, especially in a school like this, they've had plenty of education on the state of the world as it is right now. And I would much rather have that commencement address by a wise elder, someone the students picked to speak to them as they left, be something of hope, something of, you know, the positive that's happening, something about ways that they can embrace and enjoy the fruits of their labor, you know, and not just feel like now you're strapping on the plow and moving out into the world. It really was so heavy. And so I left thinking of, you know, things that I would say at a graduation or what I would think would be helpful. And then it got me thinking about wedding toasts and, you know, what is said by the best man or the maid of honor. I was thinking about fathers who get to have their moment. I don't know how many weddings you've been to lately, but it feels like there's this, you know, the longstanding tradition that at the rehearsal dinner, usually the father of the bride gets up and gives a long talk. And I've been to a couple great ones. One of the ones that was that has always stood out for me was that one of our close friends who really didn't talk much all the years that I knew him. I've known him. He's not a big talker. He's an engineer, kind of quiet. But when his daughter got married, he gave about a 20-minute speech about his entire relationship and how much he loved his daughter and what she meant to him. There was not a dry eye in the house. I mean, and it was probably more words than he'd said in his entire lifetime. But clearly, this moment, this momentous occasion where he was handing his daughter, in his views, handing his daughter to the man that would be her husband, was so compelling that he wanted her to know all these things. And that has always stuck with me. You know, there are moments in our life where we can say things that will have lasting value and will have lasting impact because they're said in a place where everyone is already feeling the sentimentality or feeling the importance of that. You know, if her father had gotten up and given that same talk just at a family barbecue on 4th of July, no one probably would have remembered it. They would have said, stop drinking beer. It would have had no. But because it was the wedding and it clearly was something huge for him, the talk has stuck with me. And that was 10 years ago. I was thinking about, you know, new baby showers and the things that are said. And we play silly games. And again, I don't know how many baby showers you've been to.
I've been to one or two.
Okay. So, you know, the silly games. And but there isn't a lot of, you know, talk about kind of the process of bringing this new human into the world and what this will mean for the mom and I think this is a great time to do more than just, you know, have a diapering contest on a baby, or, I mean, those are fun. I don't want to sound like a killjoy, but to also take that opportunity to really bond and welcome this new mom into the circle and to have something more be said. So I'm thinking about how we send people off or welcome people in the world, and how we wish them well. And what are the ways that we do it? And the thing that I keep kind of coming back to is the art of toasts. You know, it's an important ritual. And I think it is undervalued. I know that a lot of people will run to Google and Google, "I need a toast," you know, and then run out and just whip out an old Irish ditty when they need it. But really, the history of toasts are quite something. And it's the act of toasting is a ritual of connection that's been around since before the Middle Ages, that bring people together, and mark momentous occasions. And so we really underestimate the importance of the words and the sentiments that are shared when we give a toast, or the importance of being able to say something when the time requires it. I think a lot of people freeze up. I understand that public speaking is, right, the greatest fear for most people, more so than death. But it's sometimes important to overcome our fear of public speaking to say the things that matter at the right time. And unfortunately, because in the last century, we've come to diminish the importance of toasting or ritual or connecting people together during ceremony. We don't really value or nurture or encourage rituals of ceremony of any kind. We've kind of lost the art of toasting. And so by default, we tend to do two things. We either say cheers, or we say, "I wish you happiness." And neither one of those are satisfactory. They're easy. They're easy go-tos. They're acceptable, but they really don't bring the kind of importance to the occasion that needs to be there. Like, cheers is if you're saying, "I don't really have anything meaningful to say. I just want us all to drink. Cheers," right? And then the happiness go-to, you know, "I wish you happiness," or "just be happy." That, to me, the underlying message is, I have no tangible words of wisdom or comfort or insight or anything really to offer you as you step into this momentous place. So I'll wish you happiness, because who doesn't want happiness? But unfortunately, you know, important life events really deserve so much more than a throwaway platitude, especially something like happiness, which is an emotion that comes and goes throughout our day, depending on how we're feeling in the moment. And so to wish happiness on someone is really a crippling curse. Because if you tell someone the only thing that's really of value in your life is to be happy, all of the times in your life when you don't feel happy, basically you'll be failing. And so what have you now given this person but the curse of feeling like unless they're happy, they're somehow failing at life? And so I wanted to focus today on toasting and the elements of a good toast, and open up the phone lines and ask people, do you remember a legendary toast that came at an important time in your life? Or were you the person who was able to deliver a legendary toast? And why was it important or special? So think about that. What are those times where a toast really set the stage for an event, or really kind of brought together a group of people in a meaningful way? If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can be part of the conversation by giving us a call at 805-781-3875. You can also find out more about our show on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can always send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And you can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org under the Programs tab, or subscribe to our podcast, A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist, by visiting Apple Podcasts or NPR One, or however you find your podcasts. So we're going to talk about toasts, and we'll be right back to take your calls. This is Public Radio KCBX. Kissing like a bandit, stealing time underneath the sycamore tree. But by the awesome Valentine's.
different of her machine well a butterfly.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. And today we're going to talk about toasting and the art of toasts. And where did toasts come from and why did they go away? Or why have toasts been kind of reduced to either an Irish ditty or an old Scottish tale or something that accompanies grog on a sailing vessel? Like, our toasts have really become just kind of these cliched or old wisdom tales. But really, the art of toasting is more about a personal expression of something that feels sincerely important to us in the moment, to take this opportunity to create connection within a group of people. So can you think of a time where you were given a legendary toast or an important toast or something that was said to you at an event, or you heard said an event that felt really meaningful and important? And has there been a time that you've given a legendary toast yourself? And why did that work? And we're going to talk a little bit about the history of toasts, because I think I always like to find out the context of why things are the way they are. And then I'm going to give you the elements of a good toast so you can work on them yourself, because again, it is the season of celebration with graduations and weddings and birthdays and all sorts of opportunities. And even at the simple family gatherings, even at your 4th of July event, even at your Father's Day celebration, even when you're gathering with your tribe at Live Oak, these are important times to take a moment to raise a glass together. And what's in the glass really isn't as important as what is being said, but to mark the occasion. Because as I said earlier, you know, nothing is of value until we place value on it. Most of the important events in our life deserve a lot more recognition as being special than we give them. Because it's those moments of gathering other people, those memories that we make, that we look back on, that really give our life a sense of meaning. And without those moments of special memories and a sense of the sacred or meaning, life literally has no meaning at all. And that sounds really depressing. You looked so sad when I said that. But I don't want to underestimate how important it is to kind of get back to this idea of how important a toast is. And this idea of toasting really is more than just a precursor or invitation to drink, although in the history of toasting, that's kind of where it started. So originally, toasting was a way of expressing affectionate sentiments, to show off a bit of your personality. There's some bravado in it. It was very much an art of the masculine. Women didn't partake in toasting in the Middle Ages. I'm going to start there. But toasting, actually, there's records of it prior to the Middle Ages, but I'm going to start with the Middle Ages. So women weren't a part of the toast. So there was a lot of kind of that competitive macho bravado that was built around drinking. But the toast was the way of kind of bringing everyone together and marking this moment as being special. In Greek and Roman times, the idea of toasting was a way of tipping an offering to the Greek or Roman gods, that you would pour a little offering of the wines to the gods in exchange for good blessings or well wishes, you know, that sentiment of kind of good things coming your way. But also it became kind of the throwdown for some competitive drinking, but also competitive verbal jousting that went on at these gatherings of warriors, men, that would, in this term, throw down the gauntlet. So I'd make my toast, right, drink my grog and pitch my gauntlet and then kind of throw it to the next person. So yes, in the 1600s, it was considered a competitive drinking experience, and the toasts were not a sip of the drink afterwards. You would toast and then you would down the entire glass or the entire whatever it was you were drinking. And there was a saying at this time, an English saying in the 1600s, that to drink at a table without drinking to the health of someone special would be considered drinking on the sly or an act of incivility. And so it was an important part of starting the ritual of drinking and gathering, because clearly, if you drank too much, you become very vulnerable. And so they had to kind of create this safety zone so that, you know, there wouldn't be fights or attacks that would break out in these drinking experiences. So toasting almost was this way of creating a sacred circle. It's like, now we're all brothers in this moment and we're all going to toast and kind of create the safety zone. Basically, I'm saying, you're not going to stab me and I won't stab you while we're drinking to excess.
That's really interesting. I mean, I'm assuming the fight still happened anyways.
But... Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But that's pretty cool.
But it was a little more of the brotherhood piece that was part of it. And so this whole kind of tradition of toasting that carried on. And even in the 1600s, there was an anti-toasting movement by women who were not allowed inside of the whole experience of the male drinking world. And the women didn't want the men coming home belligerently drunk and falling down and starting wars, probably over a few bad toasts, because toasts a lot of times were kind of roasts and jabs at the other people. So there was an attempt to have an anti-toasting movement in the 1600s that failed, and the toasting continued on all the way into the Revolutionary War era in the 1700s. And there's kind of this infamous event in 1770 where there were 45 dignitaries, men in the newly forming United States, who all gathered to celebrate and were toasting. So there were 45 toasts and everyone drank after each 40 of the 45 toasts. And apparently that ended in quite a brawl.
I can imagine.
And in 1791, so as a result of these kind of lawless toasting events where people would toast and drink and toast and drink, the role of a toastmaster was created. You know that term, right?
Yeah, I do.
So the role of the toastmaster was created, and his job was to make sure everyone who wanted to toast had an opportunity to have their say. Because you have to remember that at this time, what people said was taken very seriously. Words had a lot of power. We didn't throw out, you know, emoji speak like we do now. You know, people were very measured. And so the Toastmaster was kind of the diplomat or liaison to make sure that everyone had their say and that it was equal and that there wouldn't be fights that broke out. And so in 1791, the Grand Toastmaster wrote an anthology of toasts in 1791. And this is what he said about the art of toasting. A toast or sentiment very frequently excites good humor and revives languid conversation. Often does, if when properly applied, cool the heat of resentment and blunt the edge of animosity. A well-applied toast is acknowledged universally to soothe the flame of acrimony. I mean, that's a lot of responsibility.
Well said, yeah.
and much more than just cheers down the hatch. You know, that there was diplomacy and connectedness and intentions in the toast, and the art of the good toast would set the vibe of the whole event. But I also love what he says about revives languid conversations, because what do we all fear most but a conversation that starts to die off? Or a dinner party, right, where all of a sudden just kind of no one knows what to talk about. And where do we go from there? And, oh, no, someone brought up, you know, the wrong conversation. And so this toasting was a way of kind of reviving a conversation that went poorly. So how powerful would it be to always have, like, this great toast in your back pocket so the next time you're with a group that you could throw something of meaning out there and kind of move the conversation along?
David Sedaris just was telling Terry Gross that his new motto is to always have a dirty joke in your back pocket. Just, you never know when you're going to need it. Probably the same applies for a toast.
Yes, exactly. And the dirty joke can be a one piece, and then hopefully the meaningful toast is the other. So moving forward in the history of toasting, during the Revolutionary War, most of the toasts were kind of vexes against the British. And there were toasts like wishing them bugs in their britches and uncomfortable saddles and just kind of ways of making their life miserable. But after the Revolutionary War on the 4th of July, it became tradition to toast the signers of the Declaration of Independence and to have 13 toasts to the 13 states. And then continuing on with our history of toasts, in the 18th century, there was a revival of the art of oratory. because again, all things in life kind of come in and out of favor. And so there was this revival of the art of oratory and becoming masterful in the ability to create rhetoric or long-winded speeches, I think is kind of what they're talking about, but to have these long, beautifully put together toasts became an art form in the 18th century. And then in the Victorian age, when things became much more subdued, the drinking changed. The toasts were not about a toast and drinking an entire, you know, mug of brew. It became more of the sip, the toast and a sip. And women now, for the first time in the Victorian age, were included in the toasting and the rhetoric and the sharing of meaningful speech. They kind of refined the whole ritual of toasting during the Victorian age. And so the golden age of toasting is considered to be 1875 to 1920. And men and women would work really hard to compose toasts that deftly combined just the right mix of some wisdom, some humor, and a bit of being solemn to match whatever the occasion was. You know, clearly people had much more time on their hands between 1875 and 1920. They didn't have the internet to jump to. You know, they didn't have screens that were taking up their time or working insane hours that you could actually craft something that would be meaningful. And again, during this golden age of toasting was kind of the golden age of civility, where really the focus was on community and gathering and dinner parties and conversation and talking about things that mattered, creating meaning in a life that was inherently didn't have meaning. But then, of course, the prohibition comes and toasting kind of fades for a bit, even though, you know, there were places where people were still drinking and still toasting. But the whole art of toasting kind of fades out with prohibition. And then even after prohibition was repealed in 1933, the tradition of toasting kind of never came back. It just continued to decline. And kind of the idea about why it declined is that during the 20th century and now in the 21st century, that the toasting itself, being expressive, sincere, you know, heartfelt, was completely considered to be unimportant, because we've entered into this age that's gone on for the last century of being much more closed off to each other. We're not as open or available. We're much more cynical. It seemed like the idea of toasting to the modern generation was too stuffy. It was a stuffy tradition that took too much time and time away from an efficient meal. Because if you think about what happened, you know, going into the modern era, 1950s and moving forward, the modern era was all about efficiency. And it was about, you know, the modern conveniences of life. And that's when we got TV dinners and the whole idea of sitting for hours and conversing over meals or gathering for long periods of time to talk, all kind of faded away, and we became more automated and got to where we are now, moving at the speed of light every second of every day. And so you would see something that was just kind of slow and meandering like a toast falling out of favor. But it doesn't mean that we can't bring it back. And there's a lot of arguments today for why it's important to have toasts and why we need to bring them back and why we need to create more ritual around our gatherings, around weddings and graduations and new babies and birthdays. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to think about our legendary toasts. I'm going to open up the phone lines. You're listening to Public Radio KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. We'll be back to take your calls. 805-781-3875.
I wish you peace when the cold winds blow. Warm by the fire's glow. I wish you comfort in the lonely time, arms to hold you when you're aching inside. I wish you hope things are going bad. Kind words.
That's the Eagles. Does that surprise you?
No.
I Wish You Peace by the Eagles. So we're talking about toasts today, and the elements of a good toast include some sort of personal sentiment, some sort of wish or offering for the person that you're giving the toast to. So what is a toast that's been meaningful to you? Do you remember a toast that you were a part of that stood out in your life, and why was it meaningful? Why did it stand out? Our number is 805-781-3875. What do you think about this idea of creating more ritual, more ceremony when it comes to gathering, that we need to stop down and raise a glass and have something to say that's meaningful? You know, it's interesting, going back to the book of the toasting anthology from 1791, the Royal Toastmaster said that toasting's use is well known to all ranks as a stimulative to hilarity and an incentive to innocent mirth, to loyal truth and pure morality and mutual affection. And so, not advocating the drinking piece of it or even the competitive nature that goes along with the founding of toasting, but looking at toasting as something that's actually good for society, that it's good for us as individuals to participate in the art of toasting. And maybe it's a skill, you know, if you look at those things you need to know before you die, or the 100 things you should probably master, I think mastering a toast would be important, because here's some of the reasons it would help you grow. One, giving a toast requires risk and courage, because you're standing up in front of a group of people and kind of opening yourself up a way, and you're vulnerable. Giving a toast requires practice. You need to kind of think about it and get your pacing down and make sure you hit all the right spots of your toast. It requires a little bit of improv, because if things start to go a little askew while you're giving the toast, you maybe need to switch it up. So you have to be able to improv a little bit. It also requires a bit of dramatic anticipation, you know, to the event. It's like this toast will kind of open up the whole vibe of the day. And so people are waiting to hear what you have to say. And the beauty of the toast, when you give a real toast, it prompts one to share feelings, like sincere feelings, that you might not otherwise share with people. Like, there's something about standing up with that cup, right, in front of the room, or your glass, or whatever you have, that prompts people to say things that are a little more heartfelt. Maybe it's the protection of, I only have to speak for about 60 seconds, because apparently a good toast is between 60 seconds and 90 seconds of well-placed or well-timed thoughts. A toast is important because it enhances the mood of the occasion. It helps people to create memories, you know, something to talk about after that meal, or something that was said, or something that was carried off. It is an opportunity for some laughter, for feeling sentimental. Paul Dixon, who wrote the book Toasts, called toasting a verbal souvenir of time together well spent. And it inspires togetherness and camaraderie. So, Tyler, I want you to think about a time that you either gave a toast or heard a good toast. And I'm going to give you some of the elements of a good toast, and tell me how that fits in with your idea of toasting.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
The elements of a good toast, the key to a good toast, and I love this because this is an old communications term, is rhythmic builds. Do you know what that means?
There's got to be some sort of pacing.
Yes.
What you're doing.
Right. So a rhythmic build is using a repetitive phrase as kind of the structure to emphasize key points. So a rhythmic build like would be, some of you here today know Tyler as an upstanding gentleman. Some of you have just met Tyler this afternoon, and some of you wish you'd never met Tyler at all. So the some of you becomes kind of that repetitive phrase that builds the toast. So that's kind of the foundation, where you start with, you know, I'm so impressed with young Emma for taking on this challenge, and I'm so impressed that you all were able to come here today to celebrate her accomplishment, and I'm so impressed that we were able to, you know, be here on the same day. So finding that kind of repetitive phrase is the rhythmic build, and using it to build anticipation. The first part of then building that toast is to talk about the audience, to grab their attention, to not focus immediately on the person you're toasting, but the whole audience as a whole, because we all like to hear about ourselves. We all like to be part of the conversation. So to say something about the group, to get them involved. The second part of the toast is then explain why we're all together And that's kind of the core of the toast. Why are we here? We're honoring our graduates. We're honoring the married couple. We're, you know, welcoming a new baby, whatever that is that you've all gathered for and why that's important, you know, how meaningful it is to have this time and, you know, what we're celebrating. And then and you can use that rhythmic build in each piece. You know, today we celebrate the graduation of the class of 2018. We celebrate their accomplishments over the last 18 years. We celebrate the opportunities for them moving forward in the future. So again, that rhythmic build. And then the third piece of the toast is to focus on the future. So here's where you kind of give that wish, right? We want a well wish. Goes wish someone well, something more than just happiness, something that's tangible, something that they can carry with them. You know, so we raise our glass, and then again you build on that rhythmic build and find that phrase, you know, wishing you opportunities that you never expected, wishing you the resilience to stand up when you've fallen down, wishing you the ability to see beauty in nature. So having some kind of tangible wishes at the end, and then speak from the heart. No cliches. You know, it's always
absolutely
so tempting to throw out a cliche, but no cliches. Try no platitudes. Please stay away from wishing happiness, but come up with those actual solid wishes, and then raise the glass to the room and clink. And you have to clink. But you don't want to smash, but everyone needs to clink so that they all know that they're part of the event. You know, otherwise people feel like they're left out. So how does that fit with your idea of the perfect toast?
I mean, I think it fits pretty well. Humble brag, I feel like I always compare it to my toast at my best friend's wedding.
Okay.
I was her best man and got up there and you know, her husband's brother gave the first toast, and it was okay. And then I followed, but I had written it. and I have an improv background, so you rehearse it a couple of times, and then you throw it away. So
yes.
You're not reading directly off the paper, and
you have
the sentiments, and you have to be willing to improvise too, because you know your jokes may not go as planned too. But you introduce yourself, you make fun of yourself, because mm-hmm. then you can make fun of the audience.
Oh,
you make
good
fun
point.
Of yourself, and then really tug on the heartstrings a little bit, make people laugh. Maybe make them mad a little bit and then reel it all back at the end. And so I think mine was about 4 minutes, but it was apparently pretty memorable.
Well, and the thing is, there is kind of that art of reading the room. You know, you can get a sense by the look on people's faces. Is this going well? Or, you know, if you get a few chuckles, it might encourage that second joke to come up. But, you know, the idea of kind of bringing the room together, because there's nothing that feels sadder to me than going to any sort of event, anything, a dinner party, a gathering of people in a club, you know, getting the bunch of seniors together for the senior night. Now, it makes me sad when there isn't that moment where everyone recognizes why we're in the room and that everyone feels like they're included and that it's important that every single person is there and to talk about why it's important. And it was with my daughter's baby shower, you know, the people that were there, the women that were there supporting her, we went around the room and everyone kind of talked about, not everyone talked about, Kirsten, my daughter, talked about why each person in the room was important to her. And it was kind of spontaneous. We hadn't planned it at all, but it just kind of started off. She had said something and then it just kind of flowed. And that changed the whole kind of feel of the day because most people didn't know each other. Things like baby showers and weddings, you know, people have their little table where they know one or two people. But if you can tell a story about each person, a brief something that connects them and gives them kind of an introduction to the room, it changes the whole kind of energy of the event. Because after that, everyone felt special. Everyone had something they could say to someone else. It's like, oh, you knew Kirsten in college. You know, I knew her then. It's icebreakers. It gives people icebreakers. And so I think it's the responsibility really of the people hosting the event, those that are the close loved ones, to be able to stand up and command the room in such a way that it unifies everyone and makes the event not just feel important, not just honoring the person that they're there gathering for, but to make sure everyone in the room understands why they're there. Because, you know, just talking about weddings, the idea of the guests at weddings were not that they were just there to bring you presents off your registry or leave you cash or eat your food. You were to invite witnesses to this union. And so all of the members of your wedding party, all of the guests, were witnesses who were basically a part of the ceremony saying, yes, if you get into trouble or need support or company, we will support this marriage. Because, you know, hundreds of years ago, 200, 300, 400 years ago, we still understood that when two people get married, they need the support of their community, of their village, of their tribe, in order for that union to work, because it's too difficult for just two people to be all things to each other. That's too much pressure. That's too much psychic energy. You need to have your witnesses, your support around the marriage to help it continue. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're talking about toasts and creating meaning and celebration out of these everyday events. I'm sure as you're thinking about your summer, you've got a wedding or a graduation or a birthday party or a baby shower or something that's monumental, maybe a 4th of July party or picnic, Labor Day's coming up, an opportunity where you'll have a chance to stand up and say something that brings the room together. And I challenge you to take that on, to be the person that stands up to have more to say than salute to the group, and see how it changes the whole essence of the event. And I'd love to hear from you. I mean, clearly, you and I aren't the only two people that think about these things. Our number is 805-781-3875. Is there a time that you were part of a toast that was meaningful to you? And why was it? What was said that stood out?
You know, a couple days ago, I went to just a happy hour right after work, and was with a bunch of people I didn't really know. Someone had invited me, that just a colleague, and I knew that she had recently pulled in a big award for the place that she worked, and we were all hanging out together. It was a bunch of randos, and it felt like the appropriate time for a really small toast to remind us why we're all together. And it was like, so I'll just raise our glasses real quick to Emma. She did this thing, and people were like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that. And it would sort of reunite. It doesn't have to be always really, really long. It can just be a reminder of why we're all together and to celebrate each other.
Absolutely. Because they say 60 seconds is enough, and you can go longer if it's an appropriate tale, but just 60 seconds of say something to the audience, honor why we're there today, and then focus on the future moving forward. That's all it takes. You know, and there's other little pieces. If you're someone who really is worried about the pieces of the toast, like what goes into it, to set the scene on your relationship, you know, what's happening, what's being changed. So to be able to say, hey, you know, if it's about graduation, talk about the work that the graduates have done, how they've, you know, gone, they've come into college or high school, wide-eyed and worried and wondering, and now they're leaving with these skill sets. Because if you're giving, I'm keep going back to that commencement speech too, it's like they're listening halfway to your words, but if you say something actually of meaning or of value, they'll hear all the words. If you talk to the people that you're celebrating in meaningful ways, they'll hear all the words. And to say, here's where you came from, and here's where you are today, 4 years later, or 5 years later, or 20 years later, to mark that arc of that relationship. And then, of course, you got to share the amusing anecdote, which, you know, we all have them. We may always think it's funnier than the person that's getting toasted, but share an amusing anecdote, a little comic relief, like you said, a little teasing, you know, kind of poke at the person a little bit. That makes everyone in the room kind of feel in on the joke. And then address the big turning point. You know, now that you've graduated and you're moving forward, and if it's just, if it's one person you're talking about, like now that you've graduated from high school, you got that college admittance letter, and here's what you get to look forward to, or, you know, you've found this person you want to spend your life with, and now looking forward, to really take a moment to address the big turning point. What is happening? What is changing? Because if you look at the steps of ritual transformation, there are three pieces of it. There's the acknowledgement that something has changed. There is the period of time where you kind of go through that change, developing your new skills or your new identity or your new life. And then the last piece is the postliminal change, and that's when you celebrate where you were. prior to this. So if you look at graduations and weddings and even funerals, they all follow this kind of same format of recognizing that something has changed, going through, like when you get engaged, that's the preliminary stage where you say, I am no longer single, I intend to marry. And then the engagement period of time is that liminal time where you are learning about marriage, or you're learning about your relationship, or getting to know your in-laws. You know, for college, you graduate from high school, that's the preliminary. Then college is your 4 years of learning all the liminal skills to become a graduate. But both with the weddings and graduation, the end point is that ceremony, whether it's a wedding ceremony or the graduation ceremony. And they're very there is a pattern to them, because it helps our psyche acknowledge that something is shifting. So that's why things like a toast have a rhythm to them and have a format. It's why celebrations have a format, because the idea behind all of these rituals has always been to help create this sense of wholeness, meaning in our lives, and to cue our psyche, our mind, that things are different. And then it makes life feel more important.
Yeah, for sure.
So what's the next big event you have coming up? Like, let's talk about your job, you know, just moving here. And you left home, or where you were living before. Was there a going away party? You know, was there some sort of gathering where you were able to kind of separate from that old life and move to this new adventure?
It wasn't recently. I've moved around a lot over the past few years.
They're tired of celebrating you.
So I kind of just, you know, went out with a bunch of friends one night and just said, you know, I'll see you later. But when I lived in Austin for a long time, and I did get that. And there is, you know, my friends put something really, really great together that was a really fun event. And I think someone did finally raise a glass. And, you know, everyone, it's super awkward to have everybody staring, to be on the other end and have everybody staring at you and talking about you. But it does, you know, warm your heart and to see everybody. And I'm someone that is easily made fun of. So, you know, everyone shared a lot of jokes at my expense, but it was all in good fun. And it was a good way to leave.
And I think, again, there's so many times in our life where are those transitions that we, because we've become so laissez-faire and so kind of anti-stuffy traditions or anti anything that feels like it's contrived, you know, we're such a cynical society, you know. And again, the idea of, oh, I don't want anyone to stare at me, you know, and have nice things said about me. But those are the kind of the richness of life, where you can stand back and say, oh, I lived in Austin for a long time, and I'm looking around, and I did make connections with these people, and this time did have value in some way to me. And to honor that is so important, because again, remember, we gather every Tuesday to kind of talk about how we sustain our mental health, how can we best support our mental health and well-being. And I bring up the topic of toasting and honoring and making ordinary moments extraordinary, or important moments, make sure that we stop and we create the sacredness in those moments, because that's how we maintain our mental health. That's how we feel stabilized and grounded, and that we feel connected to each other. Because we're not going to get those, you know, texting. We're not going to get those feelings binge watching Netflix. We're not going to get those feelings even working out at the gym for hours on end. Now, there's some things that can connectedness and moments of celebration and a time where your friends toast and have something kind to say about you. Like, those things sustain us far, far beyond anything else. So 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of our conversation about toasting today. Yolanda, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind? I don't hear her. Is she still there? Yolanda, are you there? I don't hear her. Yolanda, hang on. We'll get Tyler a second to figure out where you are. But we're talking about toasting. It looks like Yolanda's going to talk about a 50th anniversary toast, which I would think would be a huge momentous occasion. And you'd want to say just the right thing. Kind of like the wedding toast that we talk about, that moment where you're kind of setting the course for this new relationship and helping to give the couple this sense of support from the witnesses, the people that have gathered at that time to send them off and wish them well. And so one piece of it is giving the family an opportunity to wish their child well, because it doesn't have to be. I mean, traditionally we have a toast given by the father to wish his daughter well. But, you know, again, we can always change things up. And I feel like the parents of the groom would probably have some important things they'd want to share. The groomsmen usually have their moment of toast and the bridesmaid. And I wonder if we, you know, we undersell the importance of that moment of the wedding toast, because we quite often don't take what we're doing seriously. Like, maybe if we had a little more a sense of the solemnness of the wedding and we took the toast a little more seriously, if maybe our weddings wouldn't be more successful. Should we try Yolanda once again? Hi, Yolanda. Are you there? Are you on the air?
Yes, I'm
Hi.
Here.
Thanks. I'm glad we found you. What's
so
on your mind
today?
So I
guess I'm on the air. I want to say thank you for talking about toast.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Most of the time it's just here's to the birthday girl or whatever, and you know, but I had to think back to a real toast, and the one I remembered was one that my husband made at his parents' 50th wedding anniversary, and I didn't know what he was going to say, but he talked to them about admiring them for their 50 years of commitment to mm-hmm. each other that was made day by day, month by month, year by year, and sometimes minute by minute, and that he recognized it wasn't always easy and that he loved them very much for that. And everybody was a little teary after he said that.
Oh, I bet.
And also I want to thank you for reminding me that toasts are important, and I'm going to think about toasts after this and, you know, and speak to people about why they're special.
I'm so glad, because it is that opportunity to really speak from the heart with sincerity in a room, you know, the things you wouldn't naturally say if you just pass each other in the hall or see each other for lunch, that we have
right.
those occasions, right? We have those occasions to that sometimes we overlook those people closest to us. We assume they know how we feel, but we have that moment, you know, in front of witnesses to share that. And it is a beautiful thing.
Yes, it is. And thank you for bringing this up.
Thank you, Yolanda. Thank you for taking the time to call and being patient with our phones. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're talking about toasts today. Charlie, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Okay. One of my memorable events was when I retired from the Air Force.
Oh, yes.
It was kind of like a graduation.
Absolutely.
And you know, the people said nice things about some of the accomplishments I made. And then at the end, I closed how it was a privilege and honor to take care of veterans and retirees, and how much I learned from how valuable they are to the younger air to the people coming by. And as I was reflecting, it suddenly dawned on me that I've always listened to the people that are senior to me, the sages. When I turned 80, I suddenly discovered I'm one of the sages.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, particularly when I was at KCPR, the younger students turned to me. Oh, one more important to talk about graduate. You know, there's when you're moving from one place to another, you know, you give a little talk before and after. You know, you give a talk when you're leaving, and you give a talk when you're introduced. You know, the story of the traveler. He's walking from city A to city B, and he meets two people coming towards him. One says, you know, they both ask, what are the people like in the city you're coming from? Well, what are the people like in the city that you're leaving? One guy says, oh, a great bunch. I'm sorry to leave them. The second, and he says, well, you're going to find the people very much like where you came from. And then the other, oh, a bunch of horrible, glad to be. Well, I'm afraid you're going to find the people just like the city you left.
And so a transition in life is passing from one moment to the next and kind of getting a sense of where you've been And preparing right. for where you're going to be.
Yeah, appreciate where you've been and look forward to where you're going.
Absolutely. Thank you, Charlie. I appreciate you calling in. And it is, you know, that it's everything in life is about how we honor those moments and how we take the time to create moments. And I just think about how busy my life gets. And I know, Tyler, you and I talk about this a lot, that it feels like the Tuesday to Tuesday is about an hour and then we're seeing each other again. You know, things are going so quickly that I am sad when I find myself rushing for a birthday card or trying to grab something last minute or anything, any sort of gift. I don't like that sense that I wasn't able to sit with the person that I'm getting something for, you know, and think about them and really get something of value or write something at least in the card. And that's kind of my family thing is less gift, more card, to really focus on the sentiments and rarely hand, you know, mostly handmade cards because, as Yolanda said, you know, life goes by and we generally don't remember to honor those people that we spend the most time with. We'll honor big events, but just the day-to-day. So I leave you with these thoughts about toasts and in the events coming up over the next few months to sit down and really think about what it is you want to share. A true toast, according to Paul Dixon, who wrote the book Toasts, a true toast is a medium through when deep feelings of love, hope, high spirits, and admiration can be quickly, conveniently, and sincerely expressed. And this has been a conversation with The Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can reach me at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Find me on my Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, and listen to previous show at kcbx.org. As always, I appreciate you being a part of this conversation. I look forward to continuing next week. I leave you with a little bit of Bill Withers, and this is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
I wish you flowers, sunshine, and smiles. I wish you children that grew to make you proud. I wish you pretty things to wear, sweet things to smell. Truckloads of cheer, many happy years. I wish you well. Hope you'll laugh.